Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, they employ people, and they have new ideas to help our economy grow. The podcast is produced by Recognition PR. We serve scores of companies in different sectors across the country. Some are occasionally on the podcast. We're kindly sponsored by Virtue Motors, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK. It's got dealerships representing some of the best brands you can buy, and it also owns the successful commercial vehicle retailer Vans Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and in the studio today we have Amir Khan, who's the founder of Comfy Sleeps Home, and Dale Smith, different type of home service. He's the group CEO at Host and Stay. Welcome to the podcast. Very good to have you both with us. First of all, before I get into a general discussion, let's just have 30 seconds from each of you about what your business to do. You're very different sizes, but you're equally progressing well. First, Dale.
So we're Host and Stay. We manage over 1,500 holiday lets and short-term rental properties right across the UK. So primarily in the north, but gradually working our way further south and west in the UK as well.
And you're based in that fantastic seaside town of...
Saltburn.
Fantastic. Now, Amir, what's your business?
So we innovate and design bespoke luxury beds, but we specialise in bespoke TV beds, which allows the consumer to watch TV from the comfort of the...
I've always wanted one, but my house isn't necessarily conducive to it because it's a very old house, but the idea of leaning back and watching Netflix emerge from the end of the bed, that's a pretty good idea.
Yes, we had a customer send us a video of literally what you just explained there, where they said, look, the best thing of our day is when we get into bed, and the TV was just rising up and going in for you as well. So yeah.
Now, you're based in
Dewsbury.
So West York's in Dewsbury. So I'm going to talk about your business journeys. I'm going to start with Dale, and you'll see Dale's business journey very impressive, a lot of rapid growth. And then and Amir, you're slightly earlier stage business, but there's a lot of potential there. So Dale, first of all, your career wasn't in Host and Stay or the kind of hospitality business. It started in the automotive business with our sponsor, Virtue.
Yeah, indeed. So I started in automotive. My kind of family background was automotive. My dad worked for Reggie Vardy PLC for a long time. I ended up graduating in the US, moving back to the UK after graduation and starting on the Virtue graduate program. So I was the first person on that program under Robert's leadership, and I ended up doing about 7 or 8 years in the motor industry before moving into hospitality.
And what took you to hospitality? How did you move from this fantastic trade of the motor trade into a very different trade of hospitality?
So just before I went to the US, my dad had started investing in buy-to-let property at the point in time when you could still do buy, refurbish, refinance. That obviously got put a halt in 2008 when the recession came. But when my dad and I started working full-time together in the motor industry, we started investing in property together as well. Started out in buy-to-let, a little bit of commercial. And then in 2017, we bought a property back in the hometown of Saltburn, right by the beach. And we thought, right, let's try it as a holiday let. Let's see if it generates us more revenue. And that was kind of the game changer for us. That's what evolved into Host and Stay as it is today, really.
And now you're doing very well, but you've got the market leader, of course, being Airbnb, which you'd automatically think about. I remember in 2006, Recognition PR invested in a little spin-off business called Broadband TV Channel.
Right, okay.
And people could put videos on the internet, and we put some adverts on the videos and so on. And we thought this would go very, very well. But it was also the year after YouTube launched, so it wasn't so good an idea. I realized my little enterprise ain't going to compete with YouTube. So quickly ditched that. Now, here you have a mech, and I looked at your website. It's worth looking at Host and Stay, by the way, Host and Stay. And it's very similar to the look of Airbnb in the way it works. So anyone who's rented from Airbnb would be familiar with the sort of physical way you operate the mouse and click here and click there. But how do you compete against such a mammoth, big organisation?
To be fair, they facilitate a lot of our bookings. So when we list a property, we'll list it on Airbnb and Booking.com, you know, Vrbo, the big online travel agents. Our point of difference is the management side. So, you know, our business is providing that fundamental on-the-ground management. So, you know, as an example, we employ over 300 housekeepers directly. You know, we don't outsource from that point of view. So it's that... we're providing the convenience and the service for the homeowner and we still will utilize likes of Airbnb to generate those bookings, but we'll facilitate that guest journey.
Because when you go on your website, you can actually book with you
yep,
as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
So you see, you don't mind where the business comes through and you're happy to share commissions and yep. so on. But the core of the management. Now, I owned, my late wife and I owned a little cottage in the Yorkshire Dales, and sadly okay. she passed away. And I thought, well, should I keep the cottage and should I rent it out?
Yep.
I started to rent it out, and then I had to get a cleaner, and it was 27 miles away. So someone wanted to rent it, and I had to go and make sure the sheets were cleaned.
Yep.
The cleaner didn't turn up. It was such a chew on.
Yeah. Yep.
Eventually I sold it.
Yep.
But that chew-on was, for me, the barrier to entry to being a host.
Absolutely. That's the piece that we solve. That's the bit that Airbnb doesn't solve. I think the stats on Airbnb are that around 9 in 10 hosts that start hosting, if they're doing it themselves, they end up dropping off after a few bookings because of exactly what you've talked about. So for us, it's about how do we create that kind of hands-free, hassle-free service for a homeowner. So, you know, give us the property, we will market it, but most importantly, we will manage it, we'll take care of that process piece.
Now, I know you won't want to give all your secrets away, but if I was a homeowner now wanting my property to be rented out, I'd be worried about, you know, were the cleaners or the housekeepers that were going in secure checked?
Yep.
How would we guarantee that if one was ill, I didn't have to dash up to my
yep.
property to sort it out? Those are the kind of sort of at the fringe of the transaction, they're the problem areas.
Yep. And that's for us, that's that full management piece, but also us recruiting that team in-house. So if you look at a lot of the competitors in our marketplace, certainly the bigger players in the marketplace, they'll outsource that on the ground operations. They are see themselves very much like an Airbnb, if we take certainly the three biggest players in the UK holiday let market. They're very much focused on generating the bookings, not delivering the service. Whereas for us, it's that service delivery. So, you know, back to my point, our housekeeping staff, 75% of our properties we provide housekeeping services for. And that's our own employee team.
That's a huge thing. So if you go into a new area, I noticed that you had some properties in Wales. I happen to notice that because
right, okay.
we have a project that we're doing in Wales in the next few months, and I was thinking of sending one of our producers
right, okay.
to have one of the one of your hosts yes. stays there. But so you haven't got that many in Wales because it's new.
Yep.
So do you have to go in there first and recruit the staff and then start to market, or do you do it? What comes first?
Probably twofold. So if we're starting organically, then we'll look and say, right, can we build the portfolio? And we might lean on a third party partner initially. Our break-even point for providing full service is 15 properties. Once we've got to the 15 property mark, we'll put a warehouse in place and we'll do a 60-mile drive time around that warehouse
right,
and then
right.
we can build the infrastructure.
Right.
Or we go in and we hopefully acquire a business in the area that's already got existing infrastructure, and then we can apply our model and then build out from there.
Well, let's take a pause there, because I know we want to know about the growth, where you're growing and the funding of growth. Let's come back in a minute. Let's talk about your business. What gave you the spark to start this business?
I mean, it might sound a bit of a cliche, but I literally was looking for a bed around 7-8 years ago. And we went into the Dreams and the Benson for Bed, etc. We went into them. And we were after a specific size simply because of the way our room layout was. We needed a specific size, which was more of an EU size as opposed to a UK size. But none of the companies could cater for that. And we also want the specific colour to go along with.
So basically you were being a bit fussy. By right.
The word I like to use, Graham, is we were being bespoke. So we wanted to...
Customer is always right, aren't
you? Yeah, of course. So unfortunately, nobody could cater for that, which sort of put a bit of a idea into my mind that, hold on a second, if this is an issue, and it seems to be quite a common issue, if that's an issue I'm facing, I'm sure there are hundreds of others facing similar issues. So that sort of created a spark for Comfy Sleeps Home.
Well, that's a fantastic spark. I mean, I know a lot of entrepreneurs that had something happen in their life that caused them to fill a market. I remember one of my friends, Duncan Bannatyne, who set the health club chain up. He set it up because he was recovering from a skiing accident, and his health insurer gave him the funds to have physio, and the physio said you've got to exercise. And at the time, in the mid-90s, around the northeast of England, there were very few health clubs, and where they were attached to hotels. And he tells a story about how he was on the treadmill board and just counting the ceiling tiles and working out the square footage of the gym. And hence now he's got a chain of 70 health clubs that are making decent profits. So quite often the need of an entrepreneur comes from the idea of an entrepreneur comes from a need they had to fulfill. So let's talk about the product. These beds are bespoke, and they look very nice. And I was quite surprised, pleasantly, I might add, at the price, because they look a little bit more expensive than they are. Now, I know the run-of-the-mill bed is several hundred pounds, and the mattresses can be a lot of money as well. But quite a lot of people spend quite a lot of money on a bed, because you spend a lot of time in it. And if you have a nice house, it's a feature. And I have a house that's quite nice, and I spent thousands on my bed. So talk to me about the likely cost of one of your beds.
So they range from around £900 to anywhere up to 2,000. And if you go for, you know, we have other ticket items as well that can take it up to around £3,000.
Right.
But that's the general.
And they're handmade.
Yeah, every single bed is handmade in our factory in Dewsbury.
So, well, you see, when I've got beds before, even the expensive one I've got now, I have to get the Allen key out to build the thing. Am I having to do that with your beds?
I tell you what, Graham, you won't need to lift a single tool up. There's no, it's everything's so self-explanatory that you won't need to lift the tool yourself.
Now, you don't sell mattresses, or do you help people choose mattresses? Do you?
Yeah, we help. So we have approved suppliers, right, who we recommend, and we will certainly help the customer, choose their mattress for their specific needs as well.
Never skimp on a mattress. Now, what's your advice to host and stay hosts?
But yeah.
Do you tell them don't skimp on a mattress?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the biggest things, and we've learned that over the years as well. In the early days, we were probably more price conscious in terms of what we were providing, but it actually impacts reviews, it impacts the guest experience.
Yeah, so absolutely.
And we've learned along the way of which ones to use and which not to.
Absolutely, that's right. So you've now been in business only a few years, but you're making some progress. What kind of numbers are you doing?
So
in terms of beds rather than your financials?
Yeah. I'd say we do approximately 50 beds a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, thank you. So the pandemic, actually, people sometimes look at the pandemic in a negative way for most businesses, but for our business, because manufacturing was actually allowed and people were sat at home, it really gave us the boost that we needed. And now, so we've just kicked on from there.
Pandemic was great for some things, right? TV studios were exempt from working from home, and that's why I built where we are now. I used my bounce back loan to build, but it worked out all right. Now, getting back to you've got the numbers, it's rolling. Are you growing? Are you able to see it developing and growing?
Yeah, 100%. So we're always looking for ways we can, no business is ever complete. So we are always looking for ways we can improve, whether it's the customer side of things, whether it's the actual manufacturing process side of things. So we're always looking to try and improve our.
And is that organic growth or investment led?
No, it's everything's organic at the minute. We've never sought investment at the minute. And to be fair, it's not really my area of expertise either, Graham.
Well, this is a good point to go back to Dale. So Dale, you've been organic, but now you've chosen to take an investor. And for people watching this podcast, it's interesting to note the investor, Growth Partners, Richard Harpin, founder of HomeServe with Jeremy Middleton. Very good Yorkshire entrepreneur, very skilled entrepreneur.
Yep.
So you tell us the journey about securing his funding and how much and what you can do with it.
So our funding came in July this year. So we're sort of halfway through, second half of the year as the investments come through. The journey started probably 18 months prior to that and probably around about a 12-month process with Growth Partners. So we're getting to the point where we wanted to continue to expand the business. We kind of felt like our organic growth was starting to slow. It was much easier to double when you had 100 properties to 200. You get bigger, it gets more difficult. So we wanted to start to look and acquire other businesses, and we needed to, get the capital to be able to do that. We had a number of different PE houses that we had offers from, but Growth Partner felt like the right partner for us. There was definitely an attraction there with Richard Harpin leading that fund, what he delivered in terms of HomeServe as well. So with that piece I was talking about earlier, our 300 housekeepers, we've got 25 maintenance technicians on the road that logistical piece is quite difficult. It's really fragmented, and his experience in delivering what he has done from a home serve point of view felt like a really good fit for that as well.
Absolutely. And he also bought and boosted the Checker Trade website as well. So he does have experience in networks. And that's because it's some of this now is remote management.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't just get in your car and go and talk to a member of staff and to see how they're doing. You've got to do it remotely.
Yeah.
So the investment is quite considerable. Tell us about the numbers and what you're going to do with that money.
Yep. So we had £10.5 million of investment into the business, and fundamentally that's to fuel our buy and build strategy. So we've always invested heavily from day one from a marketing point of view and from a sales point of view. That's enabled the organic growth. Now the capital investment is to enable us to buy other smaller holiday let management businesses in key locations where we can go and buy, let's say, 100 to 150 unit portfolio, and then we'll look to double that portfolio in size through our organic growth expertise over a 12 to 18 month period. So since the investment came in, we've done 5 acquisitions in the second half of this year. So it's been pretty quick. We had a lot of those lined up, and it was a matter of getting the investment in so we could then start to complete on those. But now we're looking to build the pipeline for the next 24 months. We'll continue to look at circa 100 unit operators, but we're also starting to look at some larger operators as well that'll help fuel that growth.
And from the northeast of England, where are you punching out to? I mentioned Wales. Where else are you looking?
So acquisitions we've done so far have been Brighton, Norfolk, Worcestershire, Peak District. So we've got good coverage kind of down the central and east side of the UK now. So our next roadmap is looking West Wales, certainly the southwest. Cornwall, Devon is a massive part of the market. And also we'll look to London as well in terms of the capital, because again, in terms of volume and throughput, it's one of the biggest markets in the UK.
Yeah, it's a massive tourist destination.
Yeah, absolutely.
People in the UK tend to use it for business trips and the odd weekend, but it's a big tourist destination. Yeah. Can I ask about a change in the law which happened, or not necessarily the law, but taxation?
Yep.
Which is that second homeowners, and I was one until circumstances I described earlier, will have to pay double council tax on their second homes. It's particularly appropriate in places where there are national parks.
Yep.
That is a spur to a second homeowner thinking, should I rent it out? Is that something that you've seen?
Yeah, so it depends on the profile of the homeowner. So with our portfolio, we're heavily leaned towards investor clients who want to let the property for 365 days a year or close to it. So where you end up with the double taxation on council tax tends to be your kind of true second home owner who wants to rent it a little bit or use it as a second home. Whereas if they're hitting the threshold, so if it's available for 240 days a year, if it's being let for 180, then they can qualify for business rates, which then takes them out of the council tax.
So they could still use it occasionally, maybe a couple of weeks in summer, a week at Christmas or what have you, but they're not going to be able to expect to use it every weekend.
So it's forcing people down the route of either let it commercially, which is ultimately driving economic benefit for the area that the property is in, and trying to move people away from this kind of, leaving it vacant for 6 or 9 months a year, perhaps, where it's not providing that economic benefit. So.
And what about the rateable costs to the homeowner if they go for business rates? Because business rates, and we're in a small office building in Darlington now, and the business rates are £15,000 a year.
Yeah.
So what are you looking at for a cottage in the Yorkshire Dales or the Peak District?
To be fair, when you look at what the rateable value is and therefore what you pay, so typically 50%, let's say, it ends up being very similar to what you'd be paying in council tax. However, if it's the owner's only property that qualifies for business rates, then they're likely going to get business rate relief. So we've had a lot of single home owners move to business rates, apply for small business rate relief, and they go from paying, let's say, £250 a month council tax to zero business rates. So it can actually be financially beneficial to move to business rates if they're not already.
I now remember why I couldn't rent mine out, because I couldn't get business rate relief, because I have it on the building we own in Darlington. So you can only have business rates relief on one property, can't you?
Yeah.
That's great. Now, that's a great investment story, and it's clearly delivering you growth. What's your end game? Are you going to just own and manage a larger business, or
So ambition for next year is to get to 3,000 properties under management. So we're looking to double from where we are now. We're only get to 5,000 by the end of 2027. That'll put us as position four in the UK in terms of size. But we want to go overseas as well. There's no business like ours or within the short-term rental sector has really shown that they can travel from a property management point of view and build a brand that can travel overseas. So, you know, medium to long-term, that's our ambition. So hopefully you'll see the Host and Stay brand outside the UK sometime soon.
Well, there we are. We might eventually have some input like that from Richard Harpin. Who knows? It'd be good if you could get 10 million and
do it more time. Richard, yeah.
Now, I wanted to conclude our chat, Amir, by talking about another element to your life, because when we first met and you were telling me about your entrepreneurial story, you also told me that you are a trained imam. Now, you're a man of faith, and you're actually practicing that faith every day. How does that affect your business life, and is it compatible with growing a business?
Yeah, so I would say, as a man of belief, you have to take time out for different aspects of your life. So you can't let the business consume every single part of your life. And just as you might say to somebody, you can't let your social life consume your whole life. So for me, it's my faith is very, very important. So I will always take time out at least 5 times a day, which is our prescribed prayers, at least that amount of time every single day for my faith. But in terms of the business, just logistically wise, Graham, the factory is about a 5-minute drive away from where I lead the prayers.
So. And you also, this is the point, you also lead the prayers. You're actually a solid representative of your community in so many ways.
I mean, thank you for putting it that way, Graham. I appreciate that characterization of it. I always try and strive to become a better person, a better Muslim. It's nice to be able to hear that it's somebody can see it.
Well, I think anyone that owns a business is also adding value to a community because they're employing people. You're employing a handful of people. Is it four or five people?
Yeah.
But that's four or five families helped. It's certainly a social service as well as a business. It's something of value added to a community, isn't it?
Yeah. So we actually do a lot of community work, both from my, I'm able to link my business and my faith skills. So we go into churches and we go into other multi-faith community areas and sometimes my business sponsors those events. So I'm able to link the two together.
And by the way, if anyone wants to buy a bed from you, you've got your T-shirt on there. Yeah. For people who are listening, not watching, it says Comfy Sleeps Home. Is that the name of the website?
Yes, that's the name of the website and our Instagram following and our TikTok followers as well.
Right. You need to get on LinkedIn too, because people who are on LinkedIn will love your bets, I promise you. You heard he's only got a handful of staff. How's the staff situation now with you? What's your payroll like?
So we're just over 400 people.
Wow.
In total. Say about circa 100 that are in full-time office-based roles across our HQ function, then also our warehouse functions across the UK where we operate our on-the-ground services, and then heavy on that housekeeping, maintenance, compliance operations.
So at 400 staff, the budget would not have been a happy afternoon's viewing?
Not really, no. Massive impact for us. So, you know, financial impact for us will be close to £500,000 this year, really straight off the bottom line in terms of that NI contribution, yeah.
And will you claw that? Because it isn't your business to fund ministers' dreams, it's your business to run a profitable business. How will you make up for that profit?
So we will have to pass some of that on to our property owners, really around our housekeeping services, a little bit on maintenance, because we have a fixed management fee. So we have two schemes. We either charge 12% or 15%, depending on the scheme. That's not something we can easily turn the dial on. So for us, it will be small increases in housekeeping costs as we phase through next year. And the same for our maintenance rate card for next year. We'll have to take an increase to make it viable, really.
And I suppose, Amir, for you running a smaller business, and I run a small business as well, we're slightly protected with the £10,000 allowance for national insurance. The effect of the budget on people like us is to subdue the amount of money available in the market to buy services and beds.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not the same impact, obviously, because of the scale and the size of the businesses, but, you know, it affects everybody in different ways, I suppose, Graham.
Well, that's right. I'm old enough to live through 4 Labour governments and 6 recessions. So I just think we just got to get on with it and be the answer to the problem and not the problem itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much both for joining me. That's it for the Northern Business Podcast this week. Next week's is the last podcast of the year. Now, we're planning next year's editions. And if you want to be on one of the next year's editions, please get in touch via LinkedIn to Recognition PR. Thanks to our podcast producer, Harry Sinclair, and our technical operator, Robin Campbell. Do join us next time and do like and rate and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.